vacuum on at 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. Vacuum on at 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Relaxing all parts of the body and allowing the breathing to be longer and slower and deeper. And it really gets the person into a very, very nice relaxed state. And then I say, I'm going to be counting from number 10 down to number 1. And when we get down to number 1, we're going to be in that experience that seemed to be a dream, or back to that time you were driving along in the road and then you saw a big light in the sky and your car motor stopped and you pulled over and you didn't know anything for a couple of hours when you were back in the car again. You know, whatever the presenting incident was, and then we go from there, then it opens up. So the door thing is just a metaphor to get you examined. But I would like to say that in your experience of that, April, you saw three doors. So that might be suggesting that there are three other experiences that would be helpful for you to know about. And when you consider that the three doors came up from your mind, not the hypnotherapist's mind, but your mind, it's a way of your subconscious telling you, okay, open one door, you'll find out about one experience, but there are a couple others you really need to check too.
Can I share something else?
Sure.
After the regression, I was really unstable and I couldn't even write a check. I wasn't coherent and I could see through things. I saw there was a Kleenex box. And I said, oh, there's a spider inside that Kleenex box. And it was. So I don't think it was a really positive experience for me, because I think I'm still kind of recovering from that whole thing. You know, I don't know.
Wait, how long ago was your regression to that experience?
Pardon?
How long ago was that, regression?
5 years ago.
5 years ago. So that's considerable period of time. Yeah. And are you remembering what you experienced in that regression?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I really can't talk about it, but.
No, you don't have to. Right.
It involved aliens anyway. So that was the interesting part. I thought it was, but it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, it did not involve aliens?
I thought it did, but it didn't, no.
Oh, okay. You know, there are so many things that can happen to us, even from other humans.
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes it gets confusing. I personally think that most of the beings who have anything to do with human beings, that most of them have decent intent, even if they seem to be a little bit more cold-hearted, like some of the little gray aliens are known by many people to not be caring and loving and compassionate, but to be, you know, just very interested in what they're doing, their medical exams or whatever they're doing. They seem to be more self-serving, more interested in their own research, you know, rather than caring about humans. I don't think that they or many of the less favorable types are out to really harm us, although it can seem like it, because we can easily feel victimized by these things, understandably. But I, in all the work that I've done anyway, I don't think that they're out to really, you know, torture us or make us miserable or hurt us or harm us or kill us. Although it can seem like, oh, maybe that's going to happen, you know, as we begin to realize there are unusual beings there. But some of them are really very, very benevolent and do a lot to try to help humanity and do a lot to help the individuals whom are taken to be with them. And I think that part usually doesn't get out into public notice as much as the scary parts.
Yeah. We're gonna go to Philip right now, but I want to just follow up on that. I mean, that's why I think it's important for people like you to be speaking out, because it's not like a person may have an experience, they really don't understand it, it's kind of weird, they think it's kind of bad, but you've got thousands of experiences. You can look across and see not just one experience, all the data, and make a conclusion that you see this as very sort of positive as to what's going on, rather than these sort of one or two fearful stories that people will promote.
Right. And you know what? Our world, it just gobbles up fear.
Yeah, it sells. Yeah.
You know, and it's promoted. It's deliberately, I think, you know, put into movies and television shows and all kinds of things, books. And there's something about humanity that many, many people just eat that stuff up.
Yeah. You see that when you go to Contact in the Desert or to Consciousness Life Expo, you have the regression session and you have 30 or 40 people, and then across the hall is some fear thing, and it's like 600 people and you can't get in the room. Right. Fear does sell. People love to, you know, the fear. Philip, you're up next. Do you want to ask your question? Can you unmute?
I didn't want to talk, Grant.
There you go. Well, yeah. I think she wants to actually go face to face with people here. So
okay.
Yeah, you can ask a question. You don't have to say anything about you if you don't want.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just had as a child, I had a lot of experiences with, like, you know, laying in bed at night and, you know, having like my hair pulled, or, you know, having the covers pulled off, or,
yeah,
you know, and things like that. There was an episode when I was probably six where I disappeared from my mom for maybe like a half hour, but I thought it was like 3 minutes, but then again, I was six, so I don't know if I measured time correctly then or not. But I was just curious if, through your research, if you found a correlation between people who have, you know, had an abduction experience or however you want to describe it, and other paranormal phenomena, like, you know, ghost or astral projection or things like that.
Oh, great question. Yes, there is a correlation for many, many people, not everybody. But yeah, in fact, a lot of people who are having these abduction experiences realize after a while that they are more psychic than they used to be. You know, that maybe they weren't particularly psychic, but as these experiences continue through some years, they realize, wow, like the lady just before said she could see through the Kleenex box, you know. And sometimes those abilities last for the rest of the person's life. So very often people are taught psychic skills when they're having one of these abduction experiences. And sometimes they're taught how to heal other people, and they come back with healing ability that they had not realized that they had. And then often having these experiences does go with noticing a lot of synchronicities that are happening in everyday life, and peculiar things, maybe knowing something is going to happen and then it does happen. I mean, I think a lot of people find that and they wonder, how did I know that? And so I see the beings have all kinds of ways of affecting us, including in some of those other paranormal ways. And then people who see these other beings sometimes at home in their room, they sometimes will see into other dimensions, it seems. Like they'll see a deceased person that they've known. We could call that a ghost, or I prefer to call it a spirit visitation. But that was a really great question, because I think a lot of these other aspects happen to people, or to some of the people anyway, who are having abductions, and some of the skills that people have are either taught by the beings or encouraged if the person already has some latent ability for some of these paranormal skills, that often that's brought out and enhanced in the person by the beings.
Beautiful. Yeah. You're going to love the next question. The next question is from my friend Nancy Tremaine, and she actually is a person I encouraged her to put her book out. We helped her publish her first book. I wrote a forward to her second book, and she was taken two months before Betty and Barney Hill in 1961. Oh. And she's got a question, and you'll love the question. Nancy, are you there? Can you unmute and ask your question?
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited to be talking to you, Barbara.
Nancy, thank you. We met years ago.
You know, I wrote to you when I first awakened in around 2011-12, and I've loved you ever since. Uh-huh. I remembered
thank you.
I'm so excited to be talking to you. You are so eloquent and beautiful. I just love this. You had spoken about an experience you had with a reptilian, a shorter reptilian that always, you know, I really needed that and appreciated to hear you speaking those words, especially when I have a family that thinks I'm in a cult. So would you address and talk about that?
Oh, well, anyway, I'm hearing a big echo. I don't know what that is. Anybody else? My voice.
Oh, no, you're not echoing. Am I echoing?
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
I didn't know I had that ability.
Nancy, can you mute? Can you mute? See if that makes a difference.
Oh, maybe I should mute. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
No. Well, anyway, talk about the reptile. I had heard many reports about reptilians, you know, starting in 1951. And I had a very negative impression about them. And, the echo's gone. So I had always been thinking about them as being really big, like 7 feet tall, and very muscly and big and buff and arrogant and, you know, superior acting and all of that. So it was not really what you'd call a great impression, not a favorable one. But anyway, let's see, when was this? Early in the 2000s. So I had already been doing probably 12 or 13 or so years of this regression work. And one afternoon. There was nobody else in the house, and I was walking from my study to go through the living room to another part of the house. And when I entered the living room, there in front of me, right in the middle of the living room, was standing a reptilian being, a male. I had a distinct impression that this was a male reptilian being. And I want to say that there was, in the living room, there was a big corner window, and I had loads of sunlight coming in. So, I mean, I was really seeing clearly. And so I was, of course, surprised that there was somebody there, and even more surprised that it was a reptilian someone there, and even more surprised that I liked him. He just seemed like such a good guy. And I mean, the whole thing was just dazzling. And I had such a feeling of liking for him that he seemed so friendly and so safe that I went right over to him, and he had his hand out in a handshake position. And I took his hand. So we were standing there holding hands. And he was really very close to me. His face was probably a foot in front of mine or so. And we just stood there for a few minutes holding hands, and with my looking at him, and he telepathically was talking to me. I don't think I said anything to him, although he was probably reading my mind. but he was talking telepathically, and I could pick that up, which, by the way, is very interesting, because it means that we humans have telepathic ability, but we just have not known that. But I picked up everything he said very, very clearly. And he said that he was there to give me my own vivid experience when I was conscious, awake, and in the light of day, which there was plenty of light, as I say, coming in. And he said he had been sent as a special ambassador, a friendly ambassador. He said he had been bred to be a special friendly ambassador who would come to Earth and validate for people who experienced extraterrestrial contacts, to validate that this is really true. They're not out of their minds, that these are real things that happen, even though most people don't know about it. So he said, we know that you, talking to me specifically, that you, Barbara, are totally open and accepting the truth of experiences when you are working with a person. And we know that you totally believe them. You're convinced of the truth of it. And we also know that when you are away for a month or so, like I was every year for researching crop circles in England, and I've had many other trips to other parts of the world. So when you're away for 3 or 4 weeks, and you're completely absorbed in whatever you're aware of, where you're visiting, that you occasionally have the thought, thinking back on all of this regression work with beings from elsewhere, that you occasionally have the thought, oh, I wonder if that could really be true. And then you go back involved in whatever you're doing, wherever you are. And when you come back again and work with the next person, you're reconvinced again. But because you have had those once in a great while doubts, I have been sent to let you know that this is a true phenomenon, that beings from elsewhere really do come. He never used the word ET or aliens. He said beings from elsewhere, used that phrase about 4 or 5 times. And so here I am, and you can feel me, you can touch me, you can see me, you can feel my energy. You know that I am really, really here. And indeed, I was totally convinced that he was right there. And then he went on to talk about how he and others like him once in a while will validate somebody's experiences by appearing behind them and then slowly coming up, like when the person's looking in a mirror, either in the car, it could happen with the rear view mirror, or in their own bathroom mirror, they'll come up behind the person just until the person will see one of them, and then they disappear. And so he said that's, but there has been that validation, even though it was just for a moment, validation for the person when the person is awake and conscious. And so I thought that was interesting. I had never heard that before or since. So he said that's why he was here for me, so that I would have absolutely no doubt from then on. And then when he was through saying all that, just suddenly he was gone. And I was left with my hand up, you know, in the handshake position. So they have a way of coming into our dimension and popping out. And it's very, very quick. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for asking that question, because that gives me the opportunity to share it. And I do remember meeting you at a conference years ago, and always hoped that we would have something further to do with each other.
Yeah. Thank you to Nancy for writing the book. Nancy is one of the few people that I've come across who really got some backlash from what she did. I mean, to stand up and still maintain the story, and her encounters with Mr. This reptilian, and she's written two books about it. I suggest people look her up on Amazon.com, and to have stood ground and not backed off the story after all these years, because she took more flack than I think anybody I've ever seen in terms of putting her story out and standing with it. So I think it means a lot that she gets to talk to you, that you confirm that this is for real, that you've had encounters, yes, similar encounters as well.
Next
person I want to ask for a question is somebody who should write a book, and that's Candace from Colorado. Candace, you want to unmute and ask your question? Candace was one of Bud Hopkins' early people. Is Candace
good.
There?
Great.
Coming.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi,
we met many years ago when you came to speak for us in Boulder. So the question I have has to do with AI. We had Cynthia Sue Larson came, and she shared about an experience she'd had many years ago where she actually was in the future. she had the ETs gave her an experience of a future life, like 500 years in the future. Oh. And in that time, she was part AI herself.
Oh yeah.
And there were a number of people like that, but mostly humanity was dominated by AI. And so she said that what had happened was she agreed to come back to this time to prevent the domination of AI in the future.
Oh, good.
Really interesting. And she said that, of course, the question was, did you accomplish the mission? And she said that she had, but... Yeah. But what I'm hearing from a lot of scientists and people today is that we're in danger. We're in great danger from AI becoming too advanced. Right. So I just and also that there was a prediction of singularity taking place by 2029. I think, I don't know who Ray Kurzweil or somebody possibly, but the idea is that this is not, you know, 100 years away. It's like 10 years away. It's like coming very, very quickly because of the rapid advancement. So I just wondered if you had any information, if any of the contactees that you had been speaking with were bringing any new information or any information about that.
No, I wouldn't say that they have, but here's something that is alarming to me, is that we, just from the worldly point of view, it's come to my attention that there are those beings and people and forces, groups that are wanting to make us all be transhumans, to be partly AI. And then there are theories that there are plans, I've heard, I don't know how true this is, that there are definite plans to make us be more AI ourselves, and not only to develop AI as separate instruments or beings, shall we say, but to convert us humans into AI as much as possible. And I mean, that would just fundamentally change the whole human race. So there are theories that even the vaccines that people have been getting in the last 2 and 3 years have that technology in them. They already have AI technology in them that is already affecting the millions of people who have taken that vaccine. Now, I don't know how accurate that is, how true that is, but I've heard that reported in 4 or 5 different sources. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a possibility that that is accurate. So it may already be underway, but then not everybody has taken the vaccine. So those people would not be affected in that way.
So by vaccine, are you talking about the COVID vaccine?
Right.
Uh-huh. So that you're saying that the transhumanism, the people who are into transhumanism are being affected if they took the vaccine or if they didn't?
If they did.
Uh-huh.
Because it was in the vaccine.
Oh, I see. Yeah, the nano. Right. I did hear that theory.
And that's from people who have really researched and analyzed what has gone into those particular vaccines. Now, not everybody who's been shot has had that particular ingredient in the vaccine. Apparently, there were a lot of injections that were given. According to these other sources, it's not my research, that many people who had the injections that did not have that component, but many other people did have that. So it may be, you know, already starting a transhumanism.
Okay.
Well, this is kind of in line with what she was sharing, and that she said, you know, at that particular time, she had to escape the whole place and come back. But would love to hear anything that you come into contact with in the future, if you share that through your sites or whatever.
It's not my work. These are reports from other people's work, so that's why I'm just saying.
I was just speaking more about contactee. If you get any information from contactees that
you might
pass on, would be awesome. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, then I would, be more public about that part if I get it from the experiencers.
Okay, let's go to Jeff in Chicago. Jeff is famous for orbs. I don't know if you've had any experience with orbs. He has hundreds of thousands of photographs, and like the UFO experiencers, orbs are being totally ignored. So Jeff, how many photographs do you have now, and what's your question?
I've got maybe 250,000 or so, but
250,000.
Yeah, too many.
Wow.
But great to meet you. I just had a question. If do you ever work with folks who don't necessarily feel like they've, or you know, there's a specific past experience that they can sort of go to, but instead feel like, you know, there's a soul group or presence with them that's sort of like preparing them for a future experience? That, like, so I guess is a past experience always part of it?
No, it doesn't have to be. No, I think more and more people are sort of coming forth with unusual things of that sort that you're talking about. I mean, there are all kinds of awarenesses that certain people have, and any of that is able to be looked at in regression. So regression doesn't have to be going to some specific past event. But I mean, it could be like some people will come and they get messages from, they don't know where exactly, but they get messages in their own minds. Some of them get so much of that they'll sit down and do automatic writing, or they'll do channeling, or sometimes they just get messages and that's it. And the messages always seem to have some meaning for them, or sometimes meaning about the larger reality. And so they will come for a regression to find out more about that, like what is it they're supposed to be knowing. And so in that kind of a regression, we just ask the authors of that information, you know, the ones who are sending the messages, to be present and to let us know what's going on and what the person needs to be knowing. So that certainly is effective too. And like for you yourself, if you would ever wonder about why is it that you have thousands of pictures of orbs, you know, why is it that you in particular are so tuned in to either seeing orbs or knowing when to take a picture because there will be orbs in it? You know, that's a special sense that you have. And there probably is a reason for that. And if you wanted to do a regression to find out more about that, like why is this happening to me? It could open up into something really wonderful. In my opinion, wonderful, probably yours too. You know, there's probably a much bigger picture going on here for you that you may not be consciously aware of.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really exceptional and notable, wonderful that you're so aware of the orbs and can actually capture that so that other people can see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And it does have some of the most spectacular photos you've ever seen. And we did a couple of interviews with him, but it's just unbelievable what he can get. And you can actually be in a group where people get getting nothing. And then I remember we were at a C5 event in Illinois, and I immediately went to Jeff and I said, what'd you get? And he's like, oh, I got this and this and all these photographs. And he was one of the people who was getting photographs. Everybody else was sitting in the same circle taking photographs, and he got stuff that nobody else was picking up. So it's
right. Well, you see, it could be that you have sort of an interdimensional vision, that you can see the things that are really here around us all the time that most of us don't see. but you may have that particular kind of vision. And I would take a guess that there's more to this than meets the eye. In other words, you're more in tune with other dimensional reality than most of us are.
Beautiful. So Jeff, if you do the regression, come back and let's do an interview and we'll find out what you're really up to.
Yeah, we'll do. Would love to.
Okay. Staying in Chicago, my friend Jan Yonder is here. I met him at Mount Shasta. We had a bunch of events there. He goes to Mount Shasta quite often for events there. And he was actually there and brought me the story for 2020 of 9 people levitated in a circle, all holding hands, oming, and surrounded by more beings than there was trees in the forest. He wasn't involved. He wasn't one of the 9 people, but he was there when all this happened. And he brought me the story. Are you there, Jan?
I am. Thank you very much. It's
wow.
Very nice
to hear about that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, it's an honor to speak with you. That experience was with a group of people that were of Hispanic descent with the Rama group. And they had a very long, bizarre way of coming together. It was 2 women and 1 man. And the group spoke Spanish, with the exception of the gentleman. And they had been pulled together through a very, very elaborate series of things where they had traveled together and done some energy work in Arizona. And they had been shared this series of events through a group in Canada, an experiencer group in Canada. And through that is how I heard about them. And I just knew they were talking about going to Mount Shasta in 2020, and I knew I wanted to go. As it evolved, as we got closer to it, the English speaking gentleman did not want his identity. He's a professional in LA, and he did not want his identity to be revealed. I don't know why he became so concerned about it, but so he pulled out, and there was no longer any English speaking people, but Katarina Castillo ended up, by me telling her about it, she talked to the people and she got us in. And so I went, they never approved me. You're supposed to have an interview or something. But anyway, I went without their approval. And I drove from Chicago all the way to Mount Shasta because it was the pandemic. And I went, and to fast forward, I guess, to the event, the night. So the night before the people were levitated, we had our closing ceremony, and it was all done in Spanish, so I couldn't understand it. But they put rose petals on us, and we were in a circle. And during that, there's actually video of the ceremony, which inadvertently captured a white being that appeared around the circle. And I shared that with Grant, and you can actually see Grant was able to pick up where there's a black shadow, like a, I don't know if it's a portal or something, but there's this bizarre thing on a tree that's near the being. And the being appeared, it looks like a human in a white robe. It looks very similar to a statue of Saint Francis. It's bizarre, but anyway, so that happened, and that we didn't even know that it happened until the video was released later, and they caught it. But that night, so after that ceremony, one of the guides said they had promised that we would meet either Adama. There's Adama and Antarel, and I forget which one was the first one. But anyway, it's this being in Rama that communicates with people and had shown himself to various members, but they said that if you thought you were going to meet him, you're not. They said that, and that we're not actually going to get to meet him, but that you've met him energetically and all kinds of stuff. So we were kind of crestfallen, but that was it. And then we were to decamp and go back to our sleeping places. But 9 people stayed back on Mount Shasta for the it was somebody's birthday
party.
Yeah, a birthday. And so they were just staying out, and they had kind of invited people at the last minute, but we weren't prepared because we didn't know that was going to be in the cart. So we didn't have the stuff. So we didn't stay. And then, and that was supposed to be the conclusion, but the next morning, so it was Kat and I, and my boyfriend, we were in a hotel, and at 6 o'clock in the morning, these birds started crowing at our window and very, very loudly. I thought it was someone's alarm clock. And anyway, and it woke us up. And they just were in the tree. We have video of it, a very strange thing. And then we decided, let's just go to the main cabin where the rest of the group is, and let's just say goodbye. So we went, we decided to do that. And we did go. This is now completely off schedule. You know, the schedule is supposed to have been over. And while we were there, all of a sudden a meeting happened. And that was because the group of nine had relayed to the woman, the other leader that was in the cabin, what had happened that night. And so in Spanish, that was being shared to the cabin. And so we're all there. It's like 30 of us. And I have absolutely no idea what's happening. You know, I'm just listening, you know, kind of listening to the sound of Spanish being spoken, but I don't understand. But there was a point during the talk where I started to tear up. I became very emotional. And I didn't know why. And even the speaker started to, her voice cracked and she became very emotional. And, you know, and then it broke. And then all of a sudden the news was being shared to me in English, what they had just shared, which was the event of the nine. And then one person in the cabin had actually witnessed during the talk, right next to the woman speaking, it was either Antarel or Adama, I forget which one now, had appeared next to her. And we assume that was when we all felt that emotion, that very strong. So the rest of us, none of us saw him, except for that one who became very emotional and was crying hysterically for a very long time. But the rest of us just could feel him. So anyway, so that was an interesting thing. Yeah. And then they went on and they shared about the event of the nine. But so they'd been out at like around, it was after midnight, like maybe 2 a.m. They were on a park bench in Mount Shasta, a bench table talking. And then the leader had gotten a message that the being was in the woods and had invited them to go into the woods. But anyway, she didn't want to go. She was scared. And so they came across the field storming, like with a very loud sound, like an elephant stamping, because they were like, if you're not going to come to us, then we'll come to you. And so they came storming, and there was like columns of light. And anyway, there was nine of them. And I had gotten the benefit of meeting some of those nine during the retreat. So it was nice to have met them as humans, you know, and gotten to feel for their energy. And then afterwards, some of them spoke English. I was able to talk to them about the experience. And some of them were younger. And one of the guys, I asked him, you know, what was that like? And he said it was the most amazing thing he'd ever had in his life. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's a long story, but it was very interesting.
Yeah. You've got a question about a friend of yours that has an experience with
I did. So my question, I think you've kind of answered it, but a friend of mine from school has a 9-year-old daughter who has been complaining about seeing a red-eyed being or beings in her room at night. Yeah. And her parents are divorced, and she's seen it actually at both her mom's house and her dad's house. Uh-huh. And she became concerned about it. And the parents, I think, are even more concerned. The dad is not supportive and doesn't want her to talk about it. But the mom came to me, and I initially was telling her, oh, it's fine. It's just contact. But then I reached out to some other people, and some people said that I should go there and tell the being not to come back, that it doesn't have permission. So I just wondered if you had, you know, I know that's a limited story. That's really all I know.
How does the child feel about it?
I think the child was concerned enough to tell her parents. But you know, I don't know. I didn't get to talk to the child herself. The child has had other experiences when she was younger. And she was never comfortable talking about those. So that's it. But I mean, the child is okay, I think. I was told that after I initially told the child not to worry about it, that everything was fine, that it was normal and a good thing, that the child was okay. She said, oh, okay. And she was cool.
Oh, yeah. Good. You think she's remained feeling that way?
Well, then I told the story that, you know, maybe I should come over and do some kind of mentally tell the spirit that it doesn't have permission to come. And my friend stopped talking to me, the one with the daughter. Yeah, I think I know her husband, her ex-husband, who I also know, was very much against this whole contact thing. And he didn't want his daughter to even talk about it. It could be, you know, he might be interfering. I don't know. I think my friend would talk to me. She stopped reaching out to me and I haven't forced the issue. I've just given them their space.
Right.
I just thought with this opportunity, I would ask the question.
Right. Well, it's certainly typical for children to have visitors in their room. I have heard about red-eyed beings. Excuse me. My voice is frogging up. excuse me. I think the important thing is, you know, how the child is, how the child is doing with it. And unfortunately, sometimes the parents do kind of repress the whole thing, probably because the father is frightened about it. He might have even have had experiences like that, which he doesn't want to face. That's a possibility. But this is, well, if you have a chance through the mother or any way you can, have an inroad into that, it would be good to say, you know, that many people get visited by unusual beings like that, and that it is something that the child can look into himself or herself eventually when wanted, when the child wants to do that, you know, could find out more about it. But I think it can be reassuring to at least, you know, the minimum is to reassure the child that a lot of people have this sort of thing happen. Yeah. And it made, I mean, you know, the thought of beings with red eyes, that's not a very comforting feeling. I think most people would feel very uncomfortable about that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that those beings are bad or harmful, although it would seem as if they would be. I think that would be our normal conclusion. By the way, I'd like to just mention that I have written a book for children about children's extraterrestrial experiences. And I've collaborated with an illustrator, and we called the book Kids Adventures with E.T. Friends in Space. It's available on Amazon and available on my website. I like people to order through my website because then I can sign the book to the person, you know, which is a lot of people appreciate that. But anyway, it's, we have 18 different scenarios. They're all full page illustrations with a small caption underneath of a child speaking about the experience. So we have pictures of kids sitting on a floor playing with ET kids and hybrid kids and another Earth kid. And we have pictures of a kid seeing a UFO and being taken from camping out in the backyard. And we have kids being taken by a couple of little beings through a portal, you know, into another dimension. And a kid sitting on the standing on the spacecraft looking out a big window and seeing the Earth from the point of view of space and being really excited to see his home planet from out there in space, and many different scenarios that real children have reported to me, either from vivid memory or from the regressions that we have done. So here's the book.
Beautiful.
Kids' Adventures with E.T. Friends in Space. We just quickly refer to it as E.T. Friends. So it's giving real scenarios from real children, and done in kind of a lighthearted way like these. Well, and when you really think about it, these are adventures, you know, whether you're adult or whether you're a child, this is an unusual adventure that people are having, being taken to a spaceship. And I have found in my work that there's so much good about these experiences, even though they're very mysterious from our point of view and can be really scary until we know more about them, about what's really been going on. So this book is to open up the conversations between the child who's looking at this book and reading the captions, and any adult, parent, grandparent, babysitter, whatever, who might be reading the book or reading the captions to the child. So we want to validate for the children who are having these experiences and open up the conversation between the child and the parents. So that parent, which has just been referred to, the father who just didn't want anything to do with it, at least the mother might be able to open it up with the child.
Excellent. That almost goes back to what Max Planck said, who the father of quantum physics, where he talked about how science advances, and ufology is the same thing. It advances one funeral at a time. And it doesn't advance by convincing your opponent that you're right. Advances one funeral at a time, and the new generation is not offended with the idea. And that's so you would see that if you talk to kids today, do you believe there's ETs? Well, of course there's ETs. Do you believe there's interdimensional? Well, yeah. I mean, it's a different world. The kids are basically going to accept that. And that's this thing where it's not a thing that happens today. It's a thing that the intelligence has been doing for 80 years, drip, 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 drip. And we're eventually at a point where the new generation, I think, will sort of accept that. I think we have one more question and then we'll shut her down here. Audrey has a question.
Hi, it's a pleasure to meet you. Perfect timing for my question. I was wondering, with all of your regressions, have you done parents and their children, and if there's similarities between the experiences?
Oh, that is a great question. Yes, in a few cases I have. In fact, the woman that I worked with more than anybody for a period of at least 11 years, maybe 11 and a half years, her son was having experiences, and her niece were having experiences. And so I did mostly the regressions with the mother, but I did talk a lot with her little son. And so I knew him when he was age 4, 5, and 6, and into his 7th year as well. And he remembered consciously a remarkable amount of his experiences. And I think the reason why he did remember them so well is because he loved them. He loved the beings. He considered them almost like his family. And he was extremely fond of them and was very excited every time he had an experience and they'd come and take him. And he had a brother who was very envious that this kid was having these experiences. So we very often heard about his experiences, and we did some regressions too with him, as well as what he consciously remembered. And then I did, many regressions, probably in total about 60 regressions with the mother. And on one occasion, the mother was taken for her own process of being a reptilian being, actually, was adding energy to her head so that she could do her healing here on Earth. And then he said, I have a surprise for you. Come with me. And he took her out of that room into what seemed to be a curved hallway. And there was her son sitting there on the floor playing with seven little hybrid kids that he had been talking about, his space friends. So she actually got to visit him on the same ship on the same occasion and then get introduced to his little space friends, who he had not ever thought of them as hybrids. He didn't even know about hybrids. But when she was there with them, she said, oh, they've got to be hybrids. They're very, very skinny. They're very, very pale. They have very straggly, thin hair. And their eyes are much bigger. And, you know, and so from her little son's point of view, at age, must have been around 5 or 6 at that time, you know, they were perfectly regular friends who he only saw on the spaceship.
Beautiful. I missed one question. Let's go to Doug quickly for a quick question and answer. Doug had his hand up and I missed it. Doug Black, is he still?
Yeah, there? I have to unmute. Yep.
Yeah.
Hi, Barbara. We met briefly. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. We met briefly at the 2017, I think, UFO Congress. We talked briefly about John Mack.
Oh, yes. You look familiar.
Yeah. So,
I remember you.
Fantastic to meet you. And I've really enjoyed reading your Meet the Hybrids book. It was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I think you mentioned that encounter with the reptilian, if I'm not mistaken.
In that book. I wouldn't.
No, you didn't. I must have read it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Do you have any experience in working with people who have faced trauma, both not just of an ET nature, but of earthly nature? And does the earthly nature of trauma interfere with accessing the ET encounters, the information, the memories? Do they get hindered?
Well, that's a great question. I think that they can by, you know, a more conscious trauma. However, I do still think that regression could get through that.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what we're focusing on that nice state of deep relaxation, which we call hypnosis.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it could be brought out. I think it going along in everyday life, there would be some sort of covering of the experience by the more recent awake kind mm-hmm. of trauma. Right. But it's all there. I mean, what I have come to understand is that every moment of everything that we have experienced is all in the subconscious part of the mind.
Yes.
Even those things that occurred to us that we were not consciously aware of at the time.
Yes.
It's all recorded. And that's why the details can come out mm-hmm. in the regression process.
Uh-huh. So you've had some personal success. Have you had experience with that particular instance?
With somebody who has on-earth trauma. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Good. Excellent. Right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I would just augment quickly while there's other people I think that want to talk and we're nearing the end, that if you ever, if you ever get a chance to get to Mount Shasta, where I met Grant last, it's a fantastic annual gathering, the Rama Group. And please, if you get a chance, pick up a copy of Grant's book. And that's where I met Jan, who just spoke a couple of times. Hello again, Jan. There's something that happens every year. It's a phenomenal location to go to in the world.
And what time, what are the dates, do you know?
Typically it's early August, isn't that correct, Jan? And is there like one Facebook page that or someplace they can go? Because that's typically, we met through Facebook. And there was usually a special page for
each. There's two different groups, though. If you go to Mission Rama, to either Enrique Villanueva's site or Ricardo Gonzalez, they have events there, and they usually run in August. And they've had a couple of events where portals open up and people go in the portals.
Yeah.
It's kind of, and they have no sort of, there's no grays, there's no reptilians, there's nothing sort of fearful about this at all. It's a totally different type of beings that show up. And so it gives you the impression that there's all sorts of beings that are interacting with us, and and the other thing, just lastly, is when you see that, like I mentioned at the beginning, when these nine people, when I've got this interview and we'll eventually put up with three of them, when they first came forward, they said, oh, well, they really, really don't want to talk. By the time the interview was over, they were fighting to talk with you, and everybody was trying to get their, you know, and they had gone from, you know, victim to messiah. They were just, they couldn't shut up about what had happened to them. So,
yes.
Anyway, well, thank you, Barbara, for coming on and for talking to experiencers and answering their questions. And hopefully we can do it again down the road, and we'll see you at events. You've got your books. I'll send you a copy of this, and you can do what you want with it. If you want to use it for something, put it on your YouTube channel. And I really appreciate the fact that you, almost like when Mike Clown said, why am I here, when he's on the ship, and they said, it's time. You volunteered for this. And I think it's you and I and everybody here probably had the same little thing that we've volunteered to do. Thank you for the service that you've done and all the people that you've helped. You've helped move the football down the field and help bring the message that I think these beings want to the world, that we are part of something bigger. And I can't say enough about the work you've done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Grant. I appreciate that. It's been nice to be with all of you, and hopefully I will be again.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for everybody for showing up.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.